Mr. Andrew Hess. Hey, Andrew.
Hey.
Great to have you.
It is good.
Anthony Ashley is here. Hey, Anthony.
Hi.
Good to have you.
Thanks.
I like your shirt. It's kind of colorful.
Yeah.
In a subdued sort of way.
Exactly.
I'm digging it. Yeah. And a new guest to the show, Sarah Beth Gilson. Hey.
Hi, Lisa. How are you?
Doing well. Very good to have you. So we've got a good roundup of folks here. And of course, I'm here always with an opinion, but I'm going to try to hold back so I can let these people talk today as well. So we're going to talk about living arrangements. And this is born out of a few emails that we've received from single young adults who are kind of like, okay, I'm like 25, 26, 27. What really should I be doing? Should I still be at home? Should I be out getting my own apartment? Should I be buying a home? One of our folks even wrote in and said that they were invited to be like part of this Christian intentional community house of like 10 people. And that was going to be all kinds of commitment, it seems, to be in regular meals, prayer, Bible studies, and also outreaching to those in their community who don't follow Christ. So a lot of options out there. And I know in different phases of young adulthood and singleness, we probably have done a number of these ourselves or kind of moved into different phases or anticipating moving into other phases. So we're going to get your opinions on what has worked, what hasn't, and kind of what would be what you feel is kind of good for different seasons of life. So let's go ahead and throw it out there. Let's talk about where we are right now, first of all, in our living situation and kind of where maybe we've been, if we've been anywhere differently. So, Andrew, why don't you start?
Sure. I've had a lot of different living situations since I moved to Colorado after graduating from college. Actually, I think I've moved 9 times.
Whoa.
And a lot of times it's because, you know, I'm renting a house.
Because you got
from
kicked
somebody.
Out.
Yeah.
I mean, let's just be
for
honest.
Bad behavior.
Okay.
Yeah. No, but a lot of I've actually lived in a lot of houses where the house was sold out from under me. We were renting it. We wanted to extend our lease, and the owner decided to sell. And so, which with the housing bubble, that probably turned out to be a good move in a lot of cases. But anyway, but this isn't about that. But during seminary, I actually lived with a family from church invited me to just, you know, live with them. And that was a neat opportunity. I've lived with a lot of different groups of guys, friends that I had, where we just kind of did life together, usually renting a place. Actually one time, Anthony's here on the podcast too. We both have lived in a mansion. Older Christian gentleman who didn't have a family opened up his big house to a lot of young guys preparing for ministry, and it was huge. I mean, it was a $1.5 million house and had a basketball court in the gym and
full theater.
Yeah.
How'd you lose that gig? What happened?
He died.
Oh. He's,
yeah, passed
okay.
away. So rest in peace, Bob. But yeah. So anyway, but Bob was just really generous in life, and So we both left that situation. But now I actually currently live with a gentleman who is just renting me a room. I was living with a group of guys, and that house got sold out from under us. And instead of going to find another house, we all kind of had to spread out. It was kind of we had to find something quick. So I'm living with a gentleman close to where I work and looking to move back in with guys that I can kind of have community with.
Mm, okay.
So that's my story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, since college, I've also moved quite a bit, and I've lived everywhere from a mansion to a actual shack for varying periods of time with, you know, very varying degrees of, you know, varying, like, numbers of roommates. Right now, I'm married and renting a house, and I've logged in a really, really amazing price for a house that is, like, far below the market value, so it's kind of hard to leave, but I have 2 kids, so
yeah,
that has to happen.
Yeah.
You need the space.
So
exactly. Yeah.
So obviously the multiple roommates thing had to be, you know, you had to ratchet it down now that you have a family. You're just family.
Yeah, you know, after I had
my second
kid.
No wonder you had to kick Andrew out. It was finally
exactly.
Like, dude, yeah, you're done.
I was like, dude, my daughter needs your bedroom, so leave.
Okay. I took the high road and left.
Okay, that's good.
I actually moved home with my parents after I graduated college. So right now I live with my parents and my 17-year-old brother.
Okay. So kind of different situations. And I've definitely had roommates as well throughout, you know, post-college and stuff like that. And then several years ago, bought a home, had a roommate there for a while, and then she went off to seminary and never got a roommate. since and kind of have gotten used to living alone, which I guess is doable because I talk to people all day here. So that's probably why it's sustainable. But, you know, at times I think it can get lonely and I miss kind of those days of camaraderie and roommates and kind of having people in my life consistently and not having to mop the kitchen floor myself all the time. I would definitely love someone else who had to share that responsibility. But so what would you guys say as you look on your current situation or past ones or whatever, what has been ideal about it and what has been kind of, you know, something that you wish you would have had kind of looking at, you know, what's worked, what hasn't?
I think for me, the thing that has been the best part of certain living situations is the community that, that naturally comes from a living situation. Even when I was living at the mansion with some guys, they were really my friends and we did a lot of things together and we really, you know, we were community, just not, we weren't just roommates. And that was really good. I think there's a lot of built-in accountability there where we could push each other more than if it's just somebody who's, you know, kind of helping me foot the bill. And so, so that was really good. Negative situations are, you know, sometimes when you're living with people, you have people that, just get under your skin. And so I think one of the things to be really careful about is really seeing this as a an interview process where you're really deciding, is this wise for us to live together? Because I think sometimes in the Christian community, we're like, oh, we should just be able to get along with anybody. It's like, well, that's true. But living together is you're constantly going to have to deal with things. So yeah, I think it is wise to think through, okay, or is this a good fit? Because it, it can be really miserable to have roommates that you just don't get along. And
yeah, I definitely had that one time. I had a roommate, just one other girl, and she was totally like looking to me as her psychotherapist. Like every night it was like unloading super negativity and all that, like a lot of drama and a lot of just griping and everything. And then my next situation was there were four of us girls and I was like, oh, this is so great because you could all kind of play off of one another. No one had to be that one person for the other person. So yeah. I noticed that was a huge, you know, that was a huge benefit. But
yeah, I think having at least three people kind of helps you escape that, you know, that trap of just being too much weight on that one-to-one relationship. And I think for me, things that I've lacked in the past with roommates, and I've also experienced it, is intentionality. And so, like Andrew was saying, in terms of like interviewing your possible housemates or roommates, you know, you want to choose people that are going to like benefit you in your spiritual walk and be intentional with you in doing life, and not just people that, you know, walk in and out the door that you never really talk to.
Mm-hmm. For me, it's been a really big adjustment going from college to living at my parents' house. In college, I lived in a sorority house with 40 other women. And all of a sudden, I'm home and it's me and my 17-year-old brother. And as crazy as it is, it's harder to share a bathroom with my 17-year-old brother than it was with 40 other women in the sorority house.
Wow. Okay. Now, and how have you negotiated the transition back home, Sarah Beth, to like dealing with, do your parents have rules or kind of how have you felt like you've lost some independence? Are you trying to kind of have to establish that or what does that look like?
My parents definitely have the same expectations and responsibilities laid on me that I had when I was in high school, especially in regards to kind of family time and prioritizing going to my brother's football games or track meets or that kind of thing so that we can all spend time together. But at the same time, I'm in graduate school, I'm working full time, I'm volunteering in youth ministry, and I'm volunteering as an advisor for my sorority. So I'm not home as frequently as I was in high school.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Now, have you guys ever thought, I mean, do you have this expectation, whether spoken or not, in your head? And of course, Anthony, you're now married. So it was kind of like you were pushed, you know, in this direction for sure. But do you have this expectation of like you do living at home for a while and you do roommates for a while and then maybe you live with an older person for a while and then eventually you should get your own place? Or have you felt pressure in any of those directions to do a certain way of living? Or have you kind of bounced back and forth without it being a big deal?
I feel that a little bit more because both my brothers are homeowners. And so I'm kind of like, it's natural for me to think that way. But I actually enjoy the freedom of not having a place because I feel like there are a lot of ways, like things that I could do in my life where it would take me away from Colorado Springs. Like I love what my life here and love what I'm doing here. But there's times where I've thought about, you know, going and getting a PhD or doing other things like that. And so for me, not owning a place and renting gives me that freedom where I literally could pick up and go if God called me to do that, or if I decided that was the best thing for me. So I've kind of thought of it that way. And there's times where I'm like, it makes sense for me to buy a house. And I've even thought about it as an investment where I could buy a house, rent out the rooms, and people could pay my mortgage. And that it might be a wise thing to do financially, but I do think that that expectation of, you know, you haven't arrived as an adult until you own a home. I think we need to be wise with that, because I kind of feel like as soon as I bought a home, like somebody would call me from, you know, Orlando, like, hey, we want you to come be a part of this church plant, and I'd be like, oh yeah, but what about this house I just bought? So again, that's just, there's balance there, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before I got married, I was not even thinking about buying a house, because I was mostly planning on staying as free as possible. Just like Andrew said, basically for, you know, anything that might come up. And then once I decided to get married, I kind of wished I had been thinking more along those lines. So yeah, I think that if that is something that's kind of like, you know, like on your heart and maybe near in your future, then that might be one reason to kind of start looking in that direction and saving up for a down payment and stuff. But it's probably unwise to feel pressure to buy a house and then do so without, you know, like a healthy down payment and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, feeling pushed into it when you're not ready is not smart. So.
Now, one of the female listeners who wrote in was talking about her as a single woman buying a home. And we've talked about that a little bit at Boundless, and Candace has written on it. And she was wondering, you know, she feels like there's this perception that single women take themselves off the market when they decide to buy homes. And then they're just kind of like, oh, okay, now I'm just single and loving it, and I'm going to be successful and just, you know, pull myself up by my bootstraps or whatever. Do you as guys feel that? Is there that kind of idea? Or?
Not at all.
No, no way.
I think that, I mean, I think...
I think it'd be awesome I mean, like, that's like, you know, back in the old days, you know, this is kind of a stupid thing to say, but like, you know, a dowry would come with all this stuff. So essentially, like, if your wife or your future spouse is wise enough to have purchased a house and taken care of that properly, then that's just more economic value for the two of you. So awesome.
Okay.
Yeah. I think when that's just evidence that a woman is wise with her money and in putting it into things that will last. So I think that, I mean, guys that are paying attention, that should be something that is attractive to a guy.
Yeah.
As a woman that handles her finance as well. And I think that's evidence of that in most cases.
Okay.
So I do think, like, going on the last thing we talked about too, that you can not want to buy a house in the next year or so and still run your finances preparing for it. Mm-hmm. I think that's an important point, because I think sometimes singles are like, yeah, I'm not looking to buy a house. And so they don't budget preparing. And so you might even want to have a budget line for a future home that I would want to buy for years, even though you're not even thinking about buying right now. I think a lot of times we get into traps of, oh, I'm just going to, you know, make sure that, you know, I'm making more than I'm spending, without really thinking about the big things you want to save for it. Because especially like Anthony, you know, like if in the next year or so I got married, I'm going to be glad that I have been saving for that, even though I was thinking the whole time, yeah, I'm not going to buy right now because who knows?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay. And Sarah Beth, kind of where's your thought process? I mean, are you thinking you're kind of doing this indefinitely, or are you kind of saying, okay, I'm doing this to prepare for some other step?
I actually have a friend that we're beginning the apartment hunt. She has been living with her parents also, and she's the oldest of seven. And there's still 5 of the 7 living at home.
Okay.
So she's really had an adjustment back home, and we're both kind of ready to have some sort of independence in a living situation, paying rent, buying our own food, that kind of thing.
Okay. So speaking of which, that kind of brings me on to a little ancillary topic of just living life then on your own, whether you move out on your own with a friend, or whether you have a group of roommates, or whether you're renting a room or whatever. What's been unique or difficult about navigating that, especially when other people are involved, about like, okay, how do you do groceries? How do you do, you know, how are you in one another's business? How do you do times of who's at the house when, and vacations and stuff like that?
Yeah, that's stuff you have to talk about, because most of the situations I've had, it's just been natural where we don't eat each other's food, or, you know, everybody's pretty laid back about it.
We don't eat each other's.
Yeah.
Stay away
from
my
food.
Yeah.
It'll be bad times.
Okay.
No, just kidding. But I do think those are things to talk about. Actually, one time there were three of us who were moving into place and we were looking for a fourth roommate, and we actually put an ad on the folks on the Family Leadership Institute has kind of an internal push to all alumni. And so we kind of sent out a blast like, hey, we're looking for a fourth roommate in the Springs, and found found a fourth roommate. And we actually had an interview at Chick-fil-A. We went and just met this guy that we didn't know. And I was literally asking him, like, what do you like? What things annoy you? Thinking, I want to make sure that we're not going to annoy you, because that's what I was thinking about it. And he actually turned into be one of our great friends. Like, I mean, he's a good friend, and we had a really good time living together. And but those are the kind of things that I was asking, like, you know, what do you like to be at home a lot? Do you like to be out a lot? You know, are you a night person or a morning person? Because I'm a morning person. Like, I'll be, you know, stirring around the kitchen at 6 a.m. And usually I live with people that are not that way and think I'm nuts, but just read the Bible. That's how Jesus was. But things like that are good to think about. And it doesn't mean it's a deal breaker. I mean, I'm really careful in the mornings. And if I go to bed before everybody else, you know, they try to keep quiet. But it's just about a matter of living together.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Anthony, how would you say that your multiple living situations pre-marriage prepared you for marriage?
I would say the biggest lesson I learned before marriage and living with people is the importance of intentionality and of being upfront with expectations. And so all of that is amply more important with a spouse. So like with roommates, you know, learning the value of almost like creating a contract of I'm responsible for this and you're responsible for this. And these are my peeves and these are my my weaknesses that other people are often peeved about with me and all that. So yeah, like communicating all those issues as much as possible is extremely helpful with anyone, and especially a spouse. Yeah.
That's good. So any other advice you would give to folks, I mean, who are looking, you know, there are a lot of people in our audience who probably are just post-college now, and they're kind of wondering, okay, where do I land? I don't want to get stuck in anything weird, or I don't want to be in a situation that's, you know, kind of that balance of, okay, I don't want to be tied down too much, but at the same time, I want to be responsible and I want to have people in my life, because that's very difficult for single people. And of course, you know, being with family like Sarah Beth is naturally that's going to breed that. Maybe living with roommates or living with a family is more difficult to get that. But what would you guys say, just best practices?
Yeah, I think when you're looking for roommates or a place to live, start it with your church or churches in the area. I've done that several times. Actually, that's how we found the mansion originally, was, you know, he had posted.
What church do you go to?
I don't want to say.
Okay.
They'll get bombarded with calls. But but actually, I mean, just calling and saying, hey, because a lot of times people have rooms to rent. They'll let big churches in the area know. And so that's a good. And then also just ask, letting it known that you're looking for people, like, you know, Facebook is a great way to just let people know, hey, I'm looking for a roommate, or I'm looking for a different living situation. And those are people that you trust. I would caution against a Craigslist or kind of just using a general way to find a place to live, because, I do think that, you know, living with believers is going to protect you from a lot of stuff that if you just live with a bunch of guys that don't share your faith, or girls, you might just be pulled into stuff or have stuff happening at your house that you're not really excited about as somebody who is full of Christ's love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd say that, like, you know, choosing godly, inspiring people to live with, and not making your housing situation your witness field necessarily. Like, choosing equally yoked people, or people that will kind of like draw you up to be, you know, more into Christ is hugely important. So, yeah, leaning on your network. If you don't know people like that, then like putting the word out in churches and with people that know who you are and might be more connected, to like connect you with people that would be a healthy situation. Yeah.
I've actually been praying over my roommate situation. She and I have known each other since she was in sixth grade and I was in seventh grade when we lived in Minot, North Dakota. And both of our families happened to retire here. And so it's kind of been an answer to prayer that we would both be ready to kind of move out of our families' houses at the same time and have that shared history and relationships, that we really kind of understand each other and know where the other one is at and where they're coming from.
Yeah, that's really good. Which is also kind of hard, too, because you actually care about one another as friends. Right. So you can't have that kind of, you know, neutral, like, mm-hmm. oh, you're just my roommate. So mm-hmm. you're going to have all kinds of drama. We'll probably have you back to talk about that, too. So that'll be good. Well, I will say, as we wrap up here, and thanks you guys so much for sharing, that stay tuned for the next segment with Glenn Stanton, because we haven't even addressed the idea of cohabitation. And I know I get a lot of questions from single young adults who are like, well, if we have this big house of people, does it really matter if it's guys and girls and all that kind of stuff? So we're going to talk about that a little bit as well and throw that into the mix, because we haven't really even brought that up in this conversation. But thanks for the great tips, you guys, and good stories. And hopefully that is helpful for all of you out there as you evaluate your current living situation or thinking of moving and just thinking of what that looks like as you mature in adulthood and how that involves community around you and the way you live. So thanks, you guys.
Thanks.
Sure.
Thanks, Lisa.